Well, it is time to take a look at the best movies of 2020. You mightn't have got to the cinema much this year. I don't think I've been at all. There were still films being made, not as many blockbusters as we might have expected hit the screens. As we all know, it's been a very strange year, but movies have been made. And our two film reviewers here on Nightlife, Alexandra Helen Nicholas and CJ Johnson, have been watching them all. And they have joined me tonight to run through their list of the top 10 movies of 2020. Alex, CJ, welcome.
Good evening, Suzanne. It is true what you say, and this is kind of important to notice. Like every year when we do this, I always say to the listeners, grab a pen and a piece of paper to write down. And this year it's more than ever because there haven't been a lot of blockbusters released because they're holding them until cinemas can be back at full capacity. And so we almost certainly will mention a lot more films tonight that you simply may not have heard of. And so really some good discovery tonight, I recommend.
All right, now, CJ, I'm going to start with you. Each of you, we're going to start with your fifth best film, and then we're going to work our way up to each of your number ones. So, CJ, your fifth best film is The Personal History of David Copperfield.
Yeah, this was Armando Iannucci's take on Charles Dickens' novel. Armando Iannucci is normally known for his very caustic political satire, basically. He created The Thick of It and Veep, and his previous films include The Death of Stalin. So he really does kind of this very barbed, very sharp, very cold satire. And yet here he comes and he makes a really warm, good-hearted, joyful, friendly, fun, lovely adaptation of The Personal History of David Copperfield by Dickens. And not only does he do that, he does it race blind, which is something that it's been happening in theatre for a long, long time, but just doesn't happen in movies. He literally cast the book without regard to race whatsoever. So a father who is of black descent can have a child who is Asian and vice versa, and it doesn't really matter. And you accept it within minutes and then you roll with it. And in doing so, he has quietly revolutionised cinema.
All right. So what was so good at it? Why has it made your top five list?
It's joyful. It's joyful. And I wanted to put something on the list that was relatively, I suppose, commercial and quote unquote mainstream and was just kind of feel good. And this is feel good, even though Dickens can get into some pretty dark areas. You know, there's always people abusing each other and there are people being starving to death and people sort of holding
being
each other in
swindled
indented servitude.
Things,
it's nice.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. And it's got a great cast. I mean, Dev Patel, Hugh Laurie, Tilda Swinton, Peter Capaldi, Ben Whishaw. What more could you want?
Yeah, it's a really, really strong cast, particularly Ben Whishaw, who plays Uriah Heep, who's one of Dickens' creeps, as a real creep. It's good fun.
All right, here's a little bit of David Copperfield.
Somebody, please. King Charles I. Are we certain that he's dead?
When last seen in public, his head was not attached to his body.
Good. Thank you. Much obliged. Boy, there.
Oh, no. Shoo, shoo, shoo. No young men needed here. I've got a garden fork.
I'm not just a young man.
No, I'll summon the constable.
No. Listen! You're my aunt.
Got it!
I'm your nephew. I'm David Copperfield from the rookery.
Mr. Dick!
I've been ill-used. And put to work not fit for me, and you're the only family I have.
Come inside. Janet!
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Dick!
Janet!
I'm barely eating.
Get in there. Do you think there are donkeys out there?
Mr. Dick!
All right, so that's a bit of David Copperfield, which is CJ's fifth best film of the year. Alex, your thoughts on David Copperfield?
I love, CJ, your point there about the warmth of this film. I do think I really love Armando Iannucci, and I do think even across some of his darker material, you know, the biting satire that you've mentioned, you know, In the Thick of It and even Time Trumpet, you know, these older things, I think there's real hope in his work that's always been there, perhaps a little more buried than in some examples than in others, but there's a real joy to this film that I think really permeates all of his work. Sometimes you have to look for it a little harder, but I love that. I love that you emphasize that and how that really rises to the top of this particular film.
Now, Alex, the funny thing is, normally when CJ and I, well, I think we've done this segment, this is our third time, and CJ always brings the horror films, and I am not a horror film fan, so I was like, CJ, why is there so much horror? But he's handed the mantle over to you, I think, because you're a real horror specialist, aren't you?
I have a thing for horror. I have a thing for horror. I think we all have a bit of a dark side, even the perkiest of us. And horror for a lot of us, I think, is a way to process things that perhaps culturally we're not encouraged to process.
All right. So your number five is a movie called In Fabric. Tell us about it.
This is a treat. This is the perfect blend of horror and comedy from my perspective. And In Fabric is just a delight because it just balances the comedy and the horror aspects perfectly. It is, in short, about a haunted dress. This is a film about a haunted dress in a department store that goes through a variety of owners and wreaks havoc on their lives. And it's this beautiful red silk number for the fashionistas amongst you. It's worth watching just for this absolutely glorious dress. Now, Peter Strickland is a British filmmaker and he's a really interesting figure. He's part of a small group of filmmakers, including Helen Cattat and Bruno Forzani, who are French filmmakers who live in Belgium. Lucille Hastehavalovic, who's a French filmmaker, who's more famous for her collaborations with her partner, Gaspar Noé. But what they kind of make experimental genre films. So they're not straight down the line horror films. They take the idea of horror and they just see what they can do. This is Peter Strickland's fourth film, and he does something really special, and I think it either works for you or it doesn't work for you. But what I love about this film, about the haunted dress, is that it's this beautiful sort of, it has a retro vibe without being patronizing, but it really takes the idea of this haunted dress very seriously. And there's a real joy in the cast of this film, and he works with an extraordinary number of actors. He's joined by Marianne Jean-Baptiste, who is a brilliant British actor. She takes the lead role. She's a single mum who is going on a blind date and wants a pretty dress to wear. And unfortunately for her, she picks the wrong dress. But most important to me is that Peter returns to work with an actor called Fatma Mohammed, who's a Romanian actor, who is just incredible. She's sort of this gothic sales assistant. If you can imagine a kind of gothic Are You Being Served, then I think you start to get into the vibe of what In Fabric is. I guarantee you've never seen anything like this.
All right, let's hear a little bit of it.
A purchase on a horizon.
Just looking, thank you.
The hesitation in your voice, soon to be an echo in the recesses of the spheres of retail. The dress is your image, onto what you project through an illusion.
I'm just going on a date. I don't normally wear this kind of thing.
Be bold. Your date will compliment you.
All right, that sounds like, well, I mean, I'm laughing at a horror film, which is not normally what I do. All right, CJ, your second film, you're taking us to Iceland. Tell us about A White, White Day.
A White, White Day was an extraordinary film from, I guess, around the first half of the year. And it's about a widower, a widowed grandfather and policeman who's building a house for his daughter and granddaughter while quietly losing his mind. He starts to suspect that his wife was having an affair. And now that she's dead, he decides to seek out the other man and wreak vengeance. The thing about this film is the vistas, the milieu. It is set in snowy, wintry, white, white Iceland, and it's just staggeringly beautiful and incredibly well directed and has a tone unlike any other film. And to take you somewhere away from yourself this year, this film really takes you to Iceland.
All right, thank you. And we don't have a clip for that one, CJ, because it's all in Icelandic. Alex, back to you. You've brought the horror again. This is a relic. You're a fourth best film of the year.
This is a really big film for Australian cinema. This film had its international premiere at Sundance earlier this year, just before everything went crazy. So it's one of the few films that was released this year that actually got a proper red carpet release. This is made by a woman called Natalie Erica James, and it's really an expansion or a reimagining of a short film that she made in 2016 called Krezik, set in the town of the same name just outside of Ballarat, which is where we find Relic. Now, while Krezik was based on a father with dementia and his daughter, what we have here is three generations of women. We have an older woman played by Robin Nevin Ender, who is really struggling with dementia, and her daughter and her granddaughter, Emily Mortimer and Bella Heathcote, come to this house to help her work out her issues and about what they're going to do. It's a beautiful film. I mean, if you've met anybody, if you've lived with anybody, if you have a family member who's faced those challenges, it can be a nightmare. And this is a very sensitive, very delicate film that really addresses something that's very difficult to talk about.
All right, let's hear a little bit of a Relic.
Do you know where you were, Mum?
Where?
No, I'm asking you.
I suppose I went out.
Out where?
If I'd known you'd call the police, I would have stayed home.
There's blood on your nightgown. Do you need help?
With what?
There are post-it notes everywhere, Mum.
It's my house. I can decorate it however I want.
Just tell me what happened.
Look, can we just take it easy today? Gran must be exhausted.
So that was Relic, the Australian film directed by Natalie Erica James. CJ, I should say, we're with CJ Johnson and Alexandra Helen Nicholas, who are our two film reviewers here on Nightlife. CJ, did you see Relic?
I did. It's terrific. Like The Babadook, it pretends to be a horror movie, but it's actually about something much, much bigger and deeper.
Now, you've brought Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Other. You reviewed this with me, I think, when I was filling in for Phil earlier in the year, but this is made your third best film of the year.
Yeah, it's superb. It has the unique distinction of being released into Australian cinemas twice. So it was released when I talked to you about it, and then Melbourne went through another lockdown and then came out and it was released again. And it deserves it. It's a very modest American film about a teenager in Pennsylvania who finds out she is pregnant and decides to have a procedure which she can only get in New York City. And a cousin accompanies her to New York City to do that. And that's essentially the story, but it's told with grace and heart and care and is monumentally moving. And if you think the subject matter sounds a little bit like, oh, that's not for me, it really is. It's a very emphatic, beautiful, charming, tender movie.
I want to spend a few minutes talking with you about your relationships, okay? Because they can affect your health. Did you know that? No? All right. So I'm going to ask you some questions. They can be really personal, and all you have to do is answer either never, rarely, sometimes, or always. It's kind of like multiple choice, but it's not a test.
Okay.
In the past year, your partner has refused to wear a condom. Never, rarely, sometimes, always.
Sometimes.
Okay. And your partner messes with your birth control or tries to get you pregnant when you don't want to be. Never, rarely, sometimes, always.
Never.
Okay.
Alex, were you a fan of Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always?
I agree with CJ. I think it's a masterpiece. It's a very delicate subject, obviously, but the filmmaker, her background in documentary filmmaking, I think really comes through, but there's also a lot of heart. It's a very gentle hand.
Mm. Now, you've bought us an R-rated film, Alex, Morgana.
Morgana is a gift. So Morgana had its world premiere at the 2019 Melbourne International Film Festival. And it's an extraordinary movie. It's a story about a woman called Morgana Muses, as the title indicates. And I don't want to go too far into her life story, but she was a very frustrated woman who made choices in her life that led her to the point where she was considering dying by suicide, and she was prepared to go, and she thought she'd just give herself one last little treat before she left, and she hired a male escort because she had been celibate for a long, long time. She had such a good time that she decided not only to keep living but to become a feminist porn star and filmmaker, which she did with gusto. She's now an internationally renowned figure in this field. The concept of feminist porn, I think, for a lot of people might be quite confronting in and of itself. This film is very, very, very welcoming, and very, it understands that perhaps not all of us are going to instantly understand what this means. And it communicates an enormous amount of humanity through its story of Morgana, about women and sexuality and what happens to us when we hit a certain age. Do we just instantly stop becoming sexual beings? It's a confronting film, but it's one that's also internationally had huge accolades. It was picked up for North American distribution. Judith Lucy is actually in the documentary, and she was there at MIFF when they premiered the film. This is a film, if you feel like being challenged, this will do it. It's an extraordinary movie.
I've conformed my entire life to my family and everyone else's expectations of me as a woman, as a mother, as a wife, and I felt that I had to suppress a lot of my own desires. By the end of the marriage, being celibate, I really, really just craved touch and intimacy and conversation.
It is extraordinary to me, this idea that if a woman is over a certain age, well then, you know, you've basically hung your vagina up on the wall.
I jokingly said, I have this idea. I just felt like I came alive.
It wasn't porn as you know porn to be. It was art.
There's some very personal quality to it that isn't the norm.
Morgana, CJ, what did you make of Morgana?
I haven't seen it yet. I've just written it down. It's on the list.
Right. You were sold by Alex. Now, I know you two had prior knowledge of each other's films. Are there any films that you violently disagree about?
No, I like all of the films that Alex has mentioned. As I say, I haven't seen Morgana, but all the others are terrific.
I think we had the opposite problem in that we had a bit of overlap, which is nice. I think that's good for listeners in that, you know, you don't need the eraser when you're writing your list. You need a good firm texter to write these films down, because I think on most of them we agree very strongly.
Excellent. You're in furious agreement. All right, so CJ, we're up to your second favourite film of the year, and this is Proxima. Tell us about Proxima.
Yeah, this was the most surprising film for me of the year. It came out on VOD during heavy lockdown, so around April, and it devastated me emotionally. I guess like everyone, I was in a tender place, but I wept throughout this film. Ostensibly, it's about a French female astronaut played by Eva Green, who gets to fulfill a lifelong goal by being called up to go aboard the International Space Station for a year. The problem is that she's got an 8-year-old daughter, she's divorced, and she suddenly realizes that leaving her 8-year-old daughter for a year to go to the space station and fulfill her lifelong dream is not going to be easy. So ostensibly it's about going to space, it's really about parenting and what can we sacrifice in order to be a parent, what should we sacrifice, how do our dreams collide with our duties as parents. And I think it might not work for non-parents at all, but I think any parents will find this the most moving film they've seen in years. I certainly did. Also, all astronauts will like it as well.
All right. Now, here's a little bit of the clip from the trailer.
I never thought I'd be saying the last mission before Mars.
You have a daughter, right? Yes. Stida.
You know, this is no place for a kid here. You're going to have to cut the cord.
There's no such thing as a perfect astronaut, just like there's no such thing as a perfect mother.
Alex, you're a parent too. Did it do the same to you?
It did, and it also has an absolutely beautiful soundtrack by Ryuichi Sakamoto, which is the icing on the cake with this one. Fantastic film.
I've got CJ Johnson and Alex Heller Nicholas with me. They are running through their top five films each of the year, which together, of course, is creating for you a list of their top 10 favourite films. So if you haven't been to the cinema, if perhaps you'd like to seek out one of these films that you've possibly missed through the year, these are their recommendations. All right, we're up to your second favourite film, Alex, Swallow.
So Carlo Mirabella Davis with Swallow presents what at first seems almost like a bit of a quirky, almost a bit of a joke or a novelty film. It's about an eating disorder called pica, which I admit I'd not heard of before I saw this film. It's about eating non-foods. So the most common kind of pica is people who eat ice, but it can expand to include dirt, people who eat dirt, and objects. And that's where we find our protagonist of Swallow, Hayley Bennett, who plays a character called Hunter, where she is in a very, very difficult marriage. And she somehow finds a way to gain a bit of autonomy, gain a bit of power over her own body by consuming objects. So we see this woman swallow some weird stuff. Marbles and things go in the mouth and they come out, and she's very proud of her work. It's quite confronting. Where this film goes, however, is really unlike anything I've ever seen. And it really digs very, very deeply into the class anxieties that lead this character to this eating disorder, and how she learns to reclaim her own sense of self. If anybody's got any doubt that men can make feminist films, Swallow would be exhibit A for me that really challenges that idea.
All right, let's have a bit of a listen. This is a clip where Hunter's surprised at home when her mother-in-law drops in.
Sorry, darling. I let myself in.
You gave me such a fright.
Obviously. I just wanted to bring this over. Self-help book. I read it when I was pregnant, and it really helped with the postpartum.
Oh my gosh. I love it. I'm making lunch. Grilled cheese sandwiches and tomato soup. Can you stay?
Oh, I wish I could.
I can make something else.
No. Don't bother. I better be going. You would look so pretty with long hair. You should grow it out. Richie likes his girls with long, beautiful hair.
Oh, gosh, she sounds like one of those passive-aggressive mother-in-laws, doesn't she, Alex?
It's a horror film in and of itself.
All right, CJ, it's time for you to reveal your favourite film of the year. Now, I've actually just borrowed the drum roll from The Mighty Challenge to give you a little bit of atmosphere.
Excellent.
All right, CJ, what do you say is the best film of 2020?
I'm thrilled to say, and it happened without any bias, that my favourite film is by an Australian filmmaker. Her name is Kitty Green, but she made her film in New York City. It's called The Assistant. And it is basically about a young woman who has been for 2 months the assistant to a hugely successful New York-based producer of successful independent adjacent American films, clearly and obviously based on Harvey Weinstein. And it is simply one Monday in her work life, but it is the Monday where she essentially crosses the Rubicon from being a pure naive to being part of the enabling system. The thing that this film is incredible in every which way. It is perfectly cast. It is perfectly made. It is perfectly shot. It is perfectly scripted. Every single thing in every frame tells more of the story. It is unbelievably, it is just so well thought out and so exquisitely presented. But it also tackles one of the biggest things that has sort of overtaken the world's discourse in the last few years. And it answered to me a question that was bugging me, which was, how did Harvey Weinstein do what he did? How did his company allow him to do it? And this film, legitimately, in 90 minutes, gave me that answer and told me a lot about the world in the process.
Let's have a bit of a listen to a clip from The Assistant.
What's your plan?
Sorry?
Where do you want to be in 5 to 10 years?
Oh, I want to produce. I want to be a producer.
You do?
Yeah.
That's excellent. We could use more women producers. You know, it's a tough job, but I can see that you've got what it takes.
Thanks.
So why are you in here trying to throw it all away over this?
So CJ, how many stars did you give this when you reviewed it for us?
I think I originally gave it 4 stars, and then as I taught it in my film studies class, I gradually started appreciating it more and more and nudged it up to 4.5, and ultimately I had to go back onto the internet and give it 5 stars. It's a perfect movie. It's a masterpiece.
All right, so CJ, with a revised score of 5 stars. So that's CJ's best film for 2020, The Assistant. Second to last night of the year, I've got Alexandra, Helen Nicholas and CJ Johnson in here telling me about their favourite films of the year. All right, Alex, it's your time for a drum roll. Make your announcement, please.
Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Dun-da-da!
All right, and this is a French film, isn't it?
It is a French film. It's made by a woman called Céline Sciamma. I have a passion. My own taste lean towards horror films and action films. I like car chases and serial killers. This film is the opposite of all of that. I never thought there would be a year where a romance, where a love story would easily be my film of the year. And yet here we are. This film is something else.
2020 has done strange things to people. I'll say that, Alex.
This film is the favourite film of a lot of film critics and film festival programmers that I know. It instantly just became their instant all-time favourite film. It's that captivating. It's a very simple story in a way. It's set in late 18th century Brittany, a little isolated island, and a painter called Marianne is hired by the mother of a woman called Heloise to paint a portrait of her daughter before she is married in an arranged marriage. But Heloise doesn't want her portrait painted, and Marianne has some trouble painting the portrait from which the film takes its title. And as the two women become closer, both we and Marianne slowly get to see both literally and symbolically. Heloise is revealed to us. We get to see her. And I think we fall in love with Heloise just at the same time as Marianne does. It's an exquisite film. It's very, very beautiful. It's beautifully shot. The director and the woman who plays Heloise, Adele Haenel, they are ex-lovers. They are ex-partners. They went out for some period of time and they had separated by the time they made this film. But there's such deep love, and it's so true, and there's something so real about this film, even though it is a historical romance.
All right. Well, I'm intrigued by both of your winning films, and I've seen neither of them, so I better get myself off and find a way to watch them. Alex, CJ, thank you so much for joining us well this year, and to give us your best of list for 2020.
Happy New Year.
You too, CJ, and Happy New Year to you, Alex.
You too.
That's CJ Johnson and Alexandra Heller Nicholas. And of course, there are our rotating movie and TV reviewers here on Nightlife. And you can catch up with CJ next week. He'll be bringing us his movie reviews then.